Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Be Radiant Radio. You are made of light and you are made to shine. Positive, uplifting, and helpful. Welcome to the show where you'll get informational and inspirational ideas on how to unleash your potential, get what you want in life, and shine like you're meant to.
Hello and welcome. I'm Angela Loeb, and I'm excited to bring you this program today, You Are What You Think. It's a topic I've been fascinated with since I was very young, when I first heard the idea that we can change reality by changing what we think. I've done tons of studying and reflection around this concept during my life, and I've even talked about what I've learned in the courses I've taught, in articles and books that I've written. It's just something that's fascinated me for a long time. And today, I'm going to look forward to sharing some of these insights I've had over the years. And I'm going to tell you about some breakthroughs we've had in neuroscience about how thoughts work in the brain and the body. Now, while preparing for today's program, I came across some great quotes that I had found several years ago. If you follow me on Twitter or Facebook, any of the pages that I manage on Facebook, you know I love quotes, so especially inspiring quotes and helpful quotes. And I found these ones about how thoughts control your happiness. To me, it's interesting, this idea that your thoughts make you what you are. And it's not new. That's what's really interesting about it. It's not new. Though we have now proved it through science, it's really age-old wisdom. For example, more than 200 years ago, Martha Washington, who was married to General George Washington, wrote to a friend after her husband became president of the United States, and she talked about her willingness to support his, quote, duty in obeying the voice of the country, end quote. In spite of her desire, their desire, to retire to this private life that they wanted to have at Mount Vernon, their home. And in her letter, she said, and this is the really interesting quote she wrote, "I am still determined to be cheerful and to be happy in whatever situation I may be, for I have also learned from experience that the greater part of our happiness or misery depends on our dispositions and not on our circumstances." And check this out. Marcus Aurelius, he's a Roman Empire from the 2nd century AD, said, quote, "The happiness of your life depends on the quality of your thoughts. Therefore, guard accordingly and take care that you entertain no notions unsuitable to virtue and reasonable nature." Now, scholars say that Buddha lived approximately 2,500 years ago, and he was known to say this, "We are shaped by our thoughts. We become what we think." I love how simple that is, right? And let's go even further back. In the Old Testament, in the book of Proverbs, chapter 23, verse 7, it says, "As a man thinketh in his heart, so he is." And this is thought to have been written around 3,000 years ago. So it's not exactly new news, is it, that you are what you think? Now, let's talk about the science behind it, because that's the real thing, the main reason I wanted to bring this information to you, because I really wanted to talk about the science that I have found out about this. And I believe my first real eye-opening experience with the science of this was back in 2007. I was working on my first book, and I had decided that I wanted to add some content to the book about attitude and how attitude affects career transition. That book was about job search, and so I wanted to really talk about how attitude and job search is affected by it. Now, I found some studies back then that looked at how laughter affects the nervous system and the rest of the body. I found information about how attitude affects the immune system and how stress endangers brain cells and how getting emotional support from friends help to reduce that brain cell damage. I came across information on how attitude affects the severity of type 1 diabetes, an especially compelling topic for me since I have family members with this disease and I might be mildly hypoglycemic. Not something I ever got diagnosed, but I think I do, and it's a related condition, so I was really interested in that. I found research that said that infants raised by depressed mothers, and then, of course, not being exposed to many smiles or the sounds of excitement in response to their actions as infants, they showed a reduced activity in their left frontal region of the brain, the area responsible for expression of positive emotions. I learned that brain plasticity, about how the brain adapts to physical changes in the body, especially physical disabilities, how brain plasticity is affected by our thoughts and our willpower and our desires to, you know, move past the disability. And around that time, I won this scholarship for one of 11 spots in the special business course. It was taught by Roy H. Williams. It was called the World Changers Program. And Roy taught us about the findings of Roger Sperry, who's well known for his split brain research. Apparently, his discoveries, he and his colleagues figured out that the left and the right hemispheres of the brain, they really, the work that they did around that, that led to some ongoing insights about human behavior and biology and, of course, brain plasticity. They did a lot of tests and work around that. Now, in that course, I met a woman who had been in an accident, and she had gotten some modest, not a lot of brain damage, but some slight brain damage to her left hemisphere. And her right side of her brain had to compensate and serve her as a result. So she was a physical demonstration of the brain plasticity. So, because you see, what Sperry and his colleagues figured out was that apparently each side of the brain has specializations. Now, Wikipedia has a great description of Sperry's split brain work. If you're interested in that, if you're fascinating like I do, then I would suggest you go check it out. But basically, in a nutshell, the left side of the brain is the analytic, logical side, controls speaking, writing, math skills, and logic. And the right brain, the right side of the brain, is more holistic, intuitive, and nonverbal. The right side is more musical, too. In fact, they can tell if a stroke patient has sustained damage to the left side of the brain when the patient can't talk but is able to sing a familiar song. And that woman that I met in the class, she had an amazing result of her accident and her left brain injury. She said that it was very difficult for her sometimes. She had to really work hard to prevent herself from talking in rhyme. And as a result, I mean, this whole thing changed her life. She actually became a poet. And there were times in the class when she slipped in her conscious control of her condition, and we did hear her talk in rhyme. It was pretty cool. I bet there are quite a few rappers out there who'd like to be able to do what she does when they're freestyling and need to bust out some rhymes. Anyway, for a fantastic account of how damage to one side of the brain, in particular the left side, affects your cognitive function, you should check out Jill Bolte Taylor's TED Talk from 2008. She's a neuroanatomist who had a stroke, and she speaks from the scientific and a spiritual point of view about her experiences when she was going through this stroke that she had. It's one of the most amazing TED Talks I've ever heard and seen. So I'm going to provide you a link to that. I'm also going to provide you a link to the split brain work that Roger Sperry and his colleagues talked about. I'll provide this for you as well. So, okay, I know we're not long into the program, but I think this is a good time to take a short break. When we come back, I want to tell you about the work of Dr. Jeffrey Schwartz. Now, he's a research psychiatrist at the School of Medicine at the University of California in Los Angeles, and he's the one that when I was doing all that research on my book, he's the one I ended up citing in my book. And he works with OCD patients, and his work proves how you can change reality with your thoughts. So I'll be back with you in just a couple of minutes. welcome back. Hope you enjoyed that uplifting song by Jeff Harvey and Chris Martin. It's called Victory. Okay, onward with the program. Today we're talking about a topic that's always fascinated me. I'm assuming that if you're still with me and your eyes haven't glazed over and you're into science too, that you're fascinated by it too. So we're talking about you are what you think. Before the break, I said I wanted to tell you about some great work that Dr. Jeffrey Schwartz is doing with his patients who have OCD. In case you don't know, that's short for obsessive compulsive disorder. It's a disorder in which the person has obsessive thoughts and fears, and these obsessions lead to illogical, repetitive behaviors or compulsions. You may have seen some characters in popular movies with this disorder. One that comes to mind is Jack Nicholson playing a man with OCD in the movie As Good as It Gets. Nicholson's characters can't walk on cracks in the sidewalk. He's compulsive about germs. He needs to lock the door to his apartment several times just to make sure it's locked. And those are just a few of the characters' obsessions. But one of the most compelling movie portrayals of OCD was done by Leonardo DiCaprio when he played the role of Howard Hughes in the movie The Aviator. It's thought that Hughes, the billionaire Hughes, had OCD, which worsened as he grew older. And there's an interesting connection to Dr. Schwartz, DiCaprio, in this movie. But first, let me tell you about what Dr. Schwartz has been doing to prove that there's this thing, mind over matter, and that it works. Using brain scan technology, he's documented how the neural connections in the brain physically change when thought patterns change. He co-wrote an article with Stephanie West Allen, and it's called Lead Your Brain Instead of Letting It Lead You. And this is what he says in the article. Acting as if you have a trait causes both brain changes and chemical changes throughout the body. Therefore, acting as if with attention to what you're doing is a very powerful technique for altering and mastering behavior. They go on to say, before neuroscience had proven that brain changes are created by behavior accompanied by full attention, the great acting teacher Konstantin Stanislavski knew this intuitively. Stanislavski worked with his students to help them convincingly act their roles. He believed that a person cannot experience a feeling on command, but the actor can evoke the feeling by willfully experiencing what he called antecedents to that feeling, antecedents or actions. So that's what they say in the article. Now, think about this. They're saying that you can acknowledge that, yes, something worries you, gives you anxiety. But if you act as if with your full attention and you consciously shift your thinking forward, you will change physical reality. You will actually change your brain. Now, I read that Dr. Schwartz was consulted by Leonardo DiCaprio when he was doing the movie. And apparently, in acting as if he had OCD, DiCaprio started assuming the traits of OCD himself. According to one article I've read, and I'm going to give you that link too, it took about a year for DiCaprio to get back to normal. I think that's incredible. Perfect example of acting as if, right? I mean, he was literally acting and acting as if he had OCD, and he got the traits of it and had to work on getting rid of it. And here's another amazing bit of science that shows how much we control the physicality of our body. Did you know that it damages you to complain often? I mean, of course you think of that. You're like, oh, don't complain. But even listening to complaining and constant complaining damages you. And I don't mean that it will simply make you feel bad to be in a constant state of negativity. I mean that it actually does physical damage to you, especially when there are no solutions being considered and it's strictly griping for the sake of griping. Robert Sapolsky, a professor of neurology and neuroendocrinology at Stanford University School of Medicine, he found that continued exposure to negative stimuli will cause the hippocampus to shrink. The hippocampus is the part of the brain that is central to learning and memory. So apparently you can actually lose neurons by listening to others complain, and that can lead to your losing the ability to retain information and adapt to new situations. Wow. That is really something to consider. I mean, stop complaining and reduce the exposure to others complaining. Hey, I plan to live a long time, and I don't know about you, but that means that I need to not shrink any part of my brain. I want to keep my mental faculties intact as long as I can. I mean, don't you? And now we know one more way to keep our brain healthy. They say be positive, and here's more proof. Now, thoughts and brain health, I think that's a fascinating subject. Now, one more little bit, and I'm going to have a short program today. It is the Easter holiday today, and I don't want to go on too long with this topic, but I do want to give you a little bit more information before we close today. Have you heard of Dr. Joe Dispenza? I was dazzled by his comments when I saw him in a live lecture. I attended this back in early 2013. He was amazing. He had the audience, like, he had us in the palm of his hands. And, in fact, we were raising our hands quite a lot because he kept asking us, are you with me? Are you still with me? Because he was throwing some awesome information to us about how the brain works, the three parts of the brain, the physiology of our body, and how it reacts to what we do, what we say, what we think, and our attitudes in general. He also has a fantastic TED Talk about how our brain processes and our body biologically deals with our intention to go from thinking to doing to being and operating in a new way. So I'd recommend looking at that. Again, I'm going to provide you the link for that. Now, Dr. Dispenza, he's an expert in the field of neuroscience, and through his books and his lectures, he teaches what happens to our brains and our physiological body chemistry when we try to change our behavior. And in the TED Talk, he doesn't really go into epigenetics too much. I mean, this is about how thought and changes in the brain and the body might affect the disposition of DNA. He only alludes to it. And as I understand it, and granted, I obviously only have a layman's understanding of this because I am not a scientist by any stretch of the imagination, just find it fascinating. Apparently, changes in gene function that cannot be explained by changes in the DNA sequence, that's epigenetics. Some research is being done that indicates that epigenetic changes can occur in response to environmental factors like diet, fear, trauma, etc. Epigenetics is a term it's been around a long time, and it seems to be controversial, but it also seems to be an area that's being taken seriously, especially in cancer research. I found this snippet of information on Wikipedia. It says, in 2008, the National Institutes of Health announced that $190 million had been earmarked for epigenetics research over the next 5 years. So for the past 5 years, I guess, they've been doing this. In announcing the funding, government officials noted that epigenetics has the potential to explain mechanisms in aging, human development, and the origins of cancer, heart disease, mental illness, as well as several other conditions. Some investigators, like Randy Jertle, Ph.D. of Duke University Medical Center, think epigenetics may ultimately turn out to have a greater role in disease than genetics, end quote. That's really interesting. So anyway, putting all of that aside about epigenetics, which is, again, fascinating in its own right, one of Dr. Dispenza's comments that he makes, and it really hits home for me, is in his video and in his work that he does, because you can look through his site and see and read some of his books, and he says this. He says that thoughts and changing ourselves and our reality. He says that in order to change that, we need to think and act greater than the conditions in our life. And, of course, I mean, that's common sense, right? But he rightly points out that every great person in history understood that they had to believe in a future that they couldn't yet experience with their senses. But they thought about it enough times and embraced it emotionally enough times that they ended up being ahead of their time. They were actually changed neurologically and physiologically ahead of the event of what they were actually envisioning. So they started to change their own, when they had the vision, is what he's saying, of what they wanted, they actually started making those changes ahead of time, neurologically in their brain and physiologically in their body, almost like a way to get prepared for the actual event of what they were envisioning. Kind of cool how this works. So he says they were already believing in that outcome without any physical evidence, and they couldn't live any other way. I mean, can you imagine, like, for instance, think about Einstein being able to come up with a theory of relativity if he hadn't really achieved this kind of state of creative visualization. You see, what happens is that you have this thought pattern that is you're physically wired in a certain way inside your brain. And the neural cluster of brain cells are connected in a certain way, just like what Dr. Schwartz discovered with the brain scans. And if you have a certain thought that you want to change, it's not necessarily going to change, create change in your life overnight. Dr. Suspenza points this out. He says that even though you're priming your brain ahead of the actual experience and you match your behaviors to your intentions, or as he says, you're instructing your body to understand what your mind intellectually understood, it's not enough to just do it once. You've got to be able to repeat the experience. You have to do it, he says, so many times that you no longer have to think about it. Then, he said, that's when you have this neurochemically conditioned response. The body memorizes the state of being that you've been thinking you want to achieve. At that point, that's when it becomes second nature, an automatic behavior. It becomes so innate in you that it's who you are, he says. He says you've literally changed biologically and you become what you think. Isn't that amazing? You have the power to do that to yourself, to actually change. You change your thoughts with conscious attention, even if it's like you act as if, just like the great people have envisioned what they want to be and who they want to, what they want to accomplish ahead of the event. They start to imagine themselves with that and then continuously thinking this way over and over again that eventually the body and the mind lines up to that intention and bam, it becomes a reality. So this is what we mean by you think and then you become and that you are what you think. Now, for example, I'm going to give you just a quick personal example and then we'll close the show. And that is, for me, in 2014, I went through a divorce. It was pretty traumatic for me. I'd been married for 26 years, been with him for 28 years of my life, which was more time with him than I lived without him. So more than half of my life spent married. It was quite a program. I'm thinking a neural cluster in there, right, of quite a programming of how I lived and who I was and how I defined myself. So I knew that based on what I'd read about what Dispenza says and what Schwartz says and all these scientists say, that I needed to shift not just, you know, my heart, but I had to shift my brain. My brain had to be rewired to think in a new way. So through the entire year, I worked on that and understood that this part of the whole process of change and changing your reality and grieving even requires some rewiring of your brain to understand your circumstances in a new way. One of the things that I did was I had to act as if I was courageous. You know, it was going to be the first time I did a lot of things on my own without being part of a couple and making some decisions about my life and what I was going to do next. And everyone kept saying, oh, you're so brave, you're so courageous. I have to tell you, I may have been acting that way, but at first I wasn't feeling that way. But I kept telling myself, I'm going to act as if I'm courageous, and I know what I have to do to be courageous. And I'm going to rewire my brain to actually be courageous, for my brain to be courageous. And it was probably about 8-9 months later that one day I was thinking about this. I was thinking about the act as if and the fact that someone else had said to me, boy, you've been so courageous. And I stopped and I thought and I felt like it, finally felt like I was courageous. It was like as though finally that part of my brain had become so automatic that I actually felt courageous. Like the decisions I was making were becoming second nature, and I was feeling courageous. So I'm just saying, maybe you have some experiences like this in your own life that you can relate to as well. Okay, so that's going to be a wrap today. That's all I really want to bring you today, and we can go off and enjoy our wonderful weekend. Please join me next time, though, on April 19th for our next program. We're going to be talking about how to increase your happiness. I'll share some findings from positive psychologists, and I'm going to give you three things they say you can do immediately to make a difference and increase your happiness. So if you want more happiness, and who doesn't, right, be sure to join me on April 19th. Also, thanks for tuning in today. I'm sending a shout-out to Doom Dance and Purple Planet for our music. You can check out their links on the webpage, and you can also see some links that I've mentioned today, resources about today's topic. And speaking of links, if you're interested in learning more about my books, courses, other programs, you can go to angelaloeb.com. That's A-N-G-E-L-A-L-O-E-B.com. you can send me an email there through that site, and I'd love to hear from you, and especially if you have any inspiring quotes. As always, I invite you to join me every first and third Sunday here on Bay Radiant Radio, where you'll get informational and inspirational ideas on how to unleash your potential, get what you want in life, and shine like you're meant to. Until next time, think well. Be well and be awesome.